This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. It's time for our monthly open clinic segment where we bring on a healthcare provider or healthcare professional and you get to quiz them about various health issues. And today we are looking at supplements and we have joining us Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association, to answer all of your questions on supplements. How are you today, Prof?
I'm good, Xiao Ik. Thank you. And good afternoon to all the listeners. Thank you for inviting me for this session.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. And, you know, supplements has always been a big thing for Malaysians, you know, for anyone really who's keen on, you know, sort of looking at what they can do to improve their health. Of course, there's a lot of debate about the use of all the supplements that are out there. And with COVID-19, I think a lot of people are also looking at whether supplements are helpful, whether it's in terms of prevention or building up their immune system. So we've already had a number of questions coming in through Twitter, Instagram. Our phone lines are open as well. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or on social media, we are at BFM Radio. But just to set the stage first, Prof. Winnie, who needs to take supplements? Is it across the board, or are there certain people who may actually be in need of them?
Yeah, so shall we? I think to start, it's important that we understand what we mean by a dietary supplement. And usually that is exactly what it says, that it's actually to ensure that we increase the intake to meet our total dietary requirements, right? So this can be in the form of course, whole foods. And for those who can't seem to achieve this through whole foods, then they will need a supplement as a vitamin, a mineral, you know, and nowadays we have also got herbs and botanicals that have certain health effects or health benefits from the supplements. But the people that really needs to consider taking a dietary supplement, first of all, is maybe those who are on very strict diets, right? So, for example, if you are controlling your weight and you are practicing a diet that removes an entire food group, so then you would want to, like, those who follow maybe a ketogenic diet, they're not taking any rice or cereals or noodles, which actually give us a lot of vitamin B. Then if you're following that kind of strict diet, then a dietary supplement is worthwhile to consider. Another group of people who also need to consider supplements are those who are unable to consume enough food to meet their requirements. So, for example, older adults, right? If they are mostly indoors, and they have poor appetite or they have chronic illness, and somehow they're not able to eat well, then they will have to. We can consider giving them a dietary supplement. Pregnant women is another group, because physiologically, when you're pregnant, you actually require more nutrients such as folic acid, iron, or calcium, and these nutrients are not easy to get just from the diet. And because of the extra requirement, normally it's routine that the doctor will also prescribe and recommend that they take iron tablets or calcium tablets, and particularly folic acid. This is also to prevent spinal diseases in the fetus, right? Mm. Now, those who take, for example, you drink a lot of alcohol. Now, alcohol can also impair your absorption of nutrients. Then, thiamine is one nutrient that people who are kind of having alcohol, drink a lot of alcohol, have an issue with, and they might then need to take thiamine supplements. And another group is your strict vegetarians and your vegans. Mm-hmm. And those who don't take any animal products at all, mm-hmm. They will be deficient of calcium as well as B12. B12 mostly come from animal products. So if they don't take it, they have to take a dietary supplement for it. So these are the few groups of individuals that will have to consider taking dietary supplements, and those with chronic disease, like, you know, you're on dialysis, you're on cancer treatment, or you've had surgery of the stomach, so, you know, it alters your nutrient absorption, mm-hmm. They will require supplements, yeah.
So there's so much variety, and it really depends whether it's because you have poor appetite or whether it's because you are undergoing a certain diet. So, you know, with so much variation, how should people be guided in terms of what kinds of supplements to take? Already you've listed out individual micronutrients, and it's not I don't think it's something that I should be just going to a pharmacy and pointing to bottles on the shelf, right?
Yes. So I think the first thing is if you feel that maybe there's something, you know, you're not eating the wholesome, you know, your healthy diets and all that, it's always good to talk to a healthcare professional. You can go and see your GP, discuss with your doctors, because they're, you know, that's the first point of contact we normally do, right? And if you have an opportunity to speak to a nutritionist or dietitian, even better. Because then we will be taking a diet history, see, you know, what is your health condition, what are you currently eating? Is there any reason why you cannot eat, you know, cannot increase, say, fruits and vegetable intake? Is there any reason why you cannot go for more whole grains, right? And so we need to do a good assessment, and from there, see whether is there a gap in your diet and really there is an issue, then we will need to recommend specific what you need to take. Yeah, so don't walk to a pharmacy and just say, I think I need a dietary supplement, you know. So that is, you'll be wasting a lot of money because you may not need some of these. Yeah.
Mm. Which I think a lot of people are doing though, Prof Winnie. So what are the dangers of doing that? Apart from wasting money, definitely. If it hits your pocket, you should be very cautious about it. But any other dangers to watch out for?
Of course, there are. Certain vitamins, like the fat-soluble vitamins, if you take them in excess, it can affect your organs. Take vitamin C. Vitamin C is very common. A lot of people go for high doses of vitamin C, you know, for common colds or and so on. Your vitamin C requirement is roughly around 75 milligrams that you require, that you can get from four or five servings of fruits and vegetables. But if you take 1,000 milligram vitamin C, which is sometimes the dosage that is being recommended from supplements, there is a risk, the maximum dosage of vitamin C, there is always an upper limit. So that's about 2,000 milligram. So what happens if you take all that? You're going to get diarrhea. You're going to find that you may have issues with even possibility of it affecting your iron status, right? So it can impair absorption of iron with very high doses of vitamin C. You also will get into issues like, you know, it can damage certain body tissues. You get cramps, you get nausea. And for people with diabetes, very high dose of vitamin C, it can actually also lead to falsely high or low readings of your blood glucose meter. Mm. So, you know, it becomes inaccurate. So that's where, you know, it leads to even more dangerous things. So the key thing here in everything that we do is first assess whether you really need it. How much do you then need? Normally, don't go beyond what we call the recommended daily allowance, and definitely not to a level that exceeds what we call the upper limit of safety. Okay. So how do you know all this? You have to talk to a healthcare professional to let you know what the numbers are.
Okay. So again, the recommended daily allowance of vitamin C should be?
I think for Malaysia, it's 70 milligrams or 75 milligrams for adults.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And for smokers, if you smoke, you need more. You need about 35 milligrams more, because smoking actually impairs vitamin C metabolism.
I see. All right. Mm. Or just quit smoking, right? And then you
yes,
get 35 milligrams
but that's
more.
Easier.
But that leads me to a question from Instagram. So, okay, the recommended daily allowance of vitamin C should be 70 to 75 milligrams for the average adult Malaysian. The upper limit, you said, is 2,000 milligrams a day. So this person on IG wants to know, then are 500 to 1,000 milligram supplements needed daily? And I think the question there is needed. How do you know whether you need vitamin C supplements?
Okay. All of us need vitamin C. That's for sure. And vitamin C is not a vitamin that's difficult to get from food. Okay. So fruits and vegetables are the richest sources of vitamin C. Right. And it's tasty. Right. And it's accessible to almost everyone. So even your papaya will have vitamin C. Your guava is very rich in vitamin C. So the amount, when we fix it at 75 milligrams, we already take into account safety issues. We already take into account the minimum level that, you know, that is required to maintain good health. So if you take about 500 or 1,000 milligram, there are some studies that show, oh, you will, I think most of the studies for vitamin C with high doses is looking at the common cold, right? How do you prevent yourself from getting colds and all that? And they tend to give these high doses. The evidence for it is, yes, some studies say it helps to reduce the severity. So when someone feels a cold is coming, they go and take their 1,000 milligram because they think it's going to reduce the severity. But beyond that, you will still get the cold. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right? So really, do you really need that much every day? The answer is no. You don't need that much every day. But thank goodness, vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin. So you're going to pass it out in your urine. So in that way, it gets rid of the excess that you have. But when you take something that is being stored in the body, like your fat soluble, you know, then that becomes an issue also.
But even then, if you're taking beyond that upper limit of 2,000 milligram of vitamin C, then it's going to lead to those problems you described earlier.
That's right. You get health issues, serious health issues from there.
So Lau on Twitter is asking then, does that mean that vitamin C, you know, especially those effervescent tablets, are they a hoax?
Okay, let's put it this way. If you can eat adequate fruits and vegetables, about 5 or more servings a day, right, you probably don't need it. Then it's fine. Yeah. Do you really need to take those? No. Frankly, if you ask me, I wouldn't recommend it. I would rather you eat whole fruits because then you get fiber, you get a lot of other health benefits from the whole foods.
Okay. I just want to continue on vitamin C as well because it's also going around that vitamin C is something that is being touted to help prevent COVID-19 or build up your immune system. What are you hearing about this? What are your thoughts about it?
Okay, so actually, there are studies, and these are, you know, good studies that are trying to explore whether does vitamin C help. So when we talk about COVID and we talk about infection and our immune system, shall we first need to understand that they are actually basically what we call an innate immunity. That means like your skin, you know, our gut, our nose, we can filter out pathogens. So those are your innate immunity. And then you've got that adaptive immunity, which is that involves a deeper system that actually creates a memory against create antibodies. And then there's a memory there. And then when the pathogen attack you again, your body knows how to respond to it. That's why vaccination works, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people are studying whether does vitamin C affect because vitamin C is important for the integral function of our body cells, like your skin texture, you know, to make sure that the cells and the epithelial cells work well. But it also works on your adaptive immunity. So we know that that's one of the functions of vitamin C. So that actually gives rise to studies that want to observe, does giving vitamin C at high dosage, not the normal 75 milligram, but if we give high dosage of vitamin C, and here we're talking about thousands of milligram, does it actually help to prevent mortality rate, dying because of COVID? Or does it even help you to prevent COVID? Or if you do get COVID, do you get discharged faster and do you recover faster? So there are trials. There are trials in China. There are trials in Europe as well and the US. And unfortunately, so far, the trials now show there is no difference, right? So it doesn't seem to help much in terms of risk of COVID infection, no difference.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of hospitalization, they didn't see any difference, not even in shortening symptoms. The duration is the same. And the studies in China actually show that there's no effect on death rates, the length of them being in ICU, or in terms of their oxygen saturation. So right now, it looks like we probably need more studies, but we can't recommend vitamin C yet for COVID.
All right. It's not the miracle cure that we're hoping for.
No, it's, it's still the vaccination.
Yeah.
It's still following the SOPs.
Absolutely. I'm speaking to Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association, for our Open Clinic show today. And we're looking at supplements. So call in with your questions, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've covered a lot on vitamin C. But, you know, speaking of COVID, there are a few questions about whether there's any impact if you've had your vaccination and you take multivitamins. So we'll come back and address that right here on Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my guest, Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association. It's our open clinic show, and we're putting the spotlight on supplements today. You know, all kinds of nutrient supplements, vitamin and mineral supplements that are so popular in the market right now, or have been for a long time, really. So do send in your questions for Prof. Winnie if you are concerned, if you want to know whether you should be taking some supplements, share your stories with us as well. So our lines are open, 03-77-32-900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Just before the break, we'd already touched on whether vitamin C high dosages, thousands of milligram, would be effective in helping to prevent COVID or reduce the severity of COVID, reduce duration of hospitalization, reduce the symptoms. According to Prof. Winnie, the evidence does not show it. And she had also already cautioned about taking high doses of vitamin C because that can lead to a lot of health problems. But on the topic of COVID, Prof, we do have two questions related to COVID vaccination and the consumption of supplements and multivitamins. One of them is asking, what supplements could interfere with the development of COVID antibodies, you know, for someone who has just been vaccinated?
That's none that I know, that I'm aware of, frankly. I think once you have gotten vaccination, it's about your immune, strengthening our immune cells, right? And no doubt, Xiaoyik, that nutrients and nutrition play an important role in strengthening immune system and immune response. So I think unless we have, we know from science that there are hosts of nutrients that actually can improve our cells, and that include our immune cells as well. So these are things like zinc, selenium, you know, iron, copper, vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin B, C, D, vitamin E. All of these have been shown to play a role in the immune function, right? But in terms specifically that if you have, you know, once you take in a vaccination, are there anything that's going to hinder it? No, I don't think nutrients do that. In fact, nutrients play an important role to support their work as antioxidant to protect our healthy cells, support the growth and activity of immune cells, and the production of antibodies.
All right.
So I would say that if you had vaccination, make sure you eat a healthy diet. Make sure you get all these nutrients inside so that you continue to have a strong immune system.
Mm. Well, you know, Ng, who is 62, is asking, you know, he is on multivitamins. Mm-hmm. So can he continue to take that after having the second dose of his vaccination?
Yes, of course. I don't think the multivitamin will do any harm. The important thing is that he should take it according to, you know, just take what is, usually they would say it needs about 100% of the recommended daily intake, right? So one tap a day, that's fine. If he also continue, should focus on eating healthy diets, right? Because for a 62-year-old man, you want to make sure your muscles are still strong. You want to make sure that your immune system remains good. If you have any chronic illness, you maintain, you are able to, manage it well. So still, I will recommend you can take your multivite, but don't forget that it is not a replacement for eating a healthy diet.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. We have Ben asking, this one goes into COVID-19 treatment a little bit. So, let's look at what you are able to address. Ben is asking, what about zinc tablets and vitamin D3 to add to COVID-19 treatment?
Yeah, that's another interesting question because people are also, I mean, scientists are also studying zinc and they're also studying vitamin D as well. We do know that vitamin D, I think there's more studies on vitamin D than zinc, shall we? The zinc studies are somewhat combined with the vitamin C studies. They still haven't found anything significant there. For vitamin D, there's a lot of interest because vitamin D also play an important role in the T cells regulation and the B cells, you know, your adaptive immunity regulation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, and also worldwide, a lot of people are having vitamin D deficiency, even Malaysians, despite being in the tropical, you know, we are in forever in the sun, we are in the tropics. But vitamin D deficiency is something that somehow it's very prevalent. So that's why people are interested to see whether, is it true that we do need vitamin D or not for this preventing and treating COVID, right? And surprisingly, there's already about 40 over studies that are looking at it. And scientifically, scientists have also put together all these studies. Some of these studies show that if you have a vitamin D deficiency, right, you tend to have a higher risk of, COVID infection, and you may have a more severe COVID infection, right? But when they look at, does it affect your ICU admission? Does it give you pulmonary complication, hospitalization? You know, did it lead to higher death? The results are still very inconsistent, right? So we can't say whether vitamin D is good or vitamin D is bad when it comes to COVID. I think there is a lot of interest. Some studies show some positivity, but at the moment now, we don't use it as treatment yet because, you know, it's just scientific studies for now, right? It can't be translated into treatment yet.
Okay, so again, just like vitamin C, there's just not enough data to recommend using it. But are you hearing of people taking it on their own?
Well, you mean vitamin C or vitamin D?
Actually, both.
Yeah. Both, huh? Okay, if you're trying to take it for the purpose of COVID, I would say you don't have to because right now the jury is out, right? If you're taking vitamin D supplements because, let's say, you're elderly, you've done your, you know, bone density scan and the orthopedic surgeon tells you that it looks like you've got osteopenia or you're at risk of hip fractures and for that reason, then you should take vitamin D, but under the prescription of a medical doctor, right? But beyond that, I would say go out in the sun, right? Spend at least 10, 15 minutes in the sun. That will give us adequate vitamin D. And also, you know, take care of a good diet. Vitamin D supplementation is at the moment now not recommended for any population for preventive purposes.
All right. So that links to a question from Sid on Twitter. He says he's not getting enough sun these days, partly due to the MCO, you know, lockdowns.
Yeah, that's right.
So should he follow that recommendation in terms of supplementation that you just said?
Well, vitamin D supplementation, because vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, so I wouldn't recommend you go out there and just buy it. Let's look into what you can do with the MCO in terms of sunlight. All you need is about 10 minutes, so maybe go stand near a window. Right? Or go out and, you know, just even if you help to, what do you say, sidaikain, you know, you're out there to hang your clothes, you get that morning sun on your skin, it is enough. There are studies showing 10 to 15 minutes is enough, especially around 10, 11 o'clock, you know. So if you're at home, do take time. Now, don't just sit in the room. Go out there and get some sunlight. And then eat a balanced diet because you can also get vitamin D from your diet, especially from fish, right? Deep sea fish, these all contain vitamin D. Mushrooms contain vitamin D as well.
All right.
Right? So not necessarily need to take a vitamin D supplement because at the moment, we do not know whether is it really needed or not.
Okay. But Cynthia wants to know if she has been prescribed vitamin D supplements, does she have to take that lifelong?
Okay. So if she's prescribed vitamin D, then yes. But at the same time, you can still look into your diet and look into getting some sunlight as well. But if she's being prescribed, possibly the levels will be quite high. Then yes, you do want to take your vitamin D until, you know, your levels come up. That means you've reached a level that is higher. So it depends on what she's being prescribed the vitamin D for.
All right. Okay. Let's go for another quick break. When we come back, we'll look a little bit at probiotics. That's another area of when it comes to supplements like these that has a lot of interest right now. And my personal interest, would supplements be needed for children? I'm speaking to Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, president of the Malaysian Dietitians Association. It's our open clinic. Ask Prof anything about supplements. So call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back after the market update, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-ik, and my guest, Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association. It's our Ask a Doctor or Open Clinic segment today, and we are focusing on supplements. So do call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio with your questions about supplements. Prof. Winnie, earlier you mentioned different groups of people who may need to consider taking supplements. And this includes people who are unable to consume certain food groups or consume enough nutrients through their daily diets. And, you know, children, notoriously fussy eaters, would supplements be at all a good idea for children?
My straight answer would be, no, it shouldn't be the first idea for children. So for children, I think it is important to cultivate. You know, they are young, and it's our role as parents to cultivate healthy eating behavior, because this is going to last them for their lifetime, right? So I wouldn't resort to dietary supplements as the way to cover, because children's, their nutrient needs are also much lower than adults, right? And you'd be surprised that even though they're picky eaters and all that, but if they do get in, you know, most of the time a balanced diet, that's probably enough to meet their nutrient requirement, right? So don't resort to supplement as the first line, you know, if your child is truly a picky eater. It's also important to assess whether is the child growing well, right? So see your pediatrician, check the growth rate. If it's growing well, not too thin, you know, and there are no other issues, then I guess the more importantly is, let's be a role model. So, you know, we have to find ways to inculcate, you know, healthy eating behaviors into the children. So as a family, cook together, you know, prepare foods which are that children like to eat, and there are lots of recipes out there. Get them to eat well and get the nutrients from the food, and cultivate that healthy eating habit rather than you know, resort to dietary supplements for kids lah.
You know, I mean, it's easier said than done, but at
the same time,
I've also come to realize, you know, if you're a parent, hang in there, because sometimes that shift just happens. Something clicks for them, and they suddenly start liking another vegetable.
Yeah,
which was my problem.
Exactly. I think hiding vegetables into their favorite dishes and trying out new recipes. I agree with you, Shelley. It's not easy. I think as a parent, we also need to be very creative, right? And very patient, you know?
Patience.
And find ways to still never give up, like you say. Yeah? That's important.
Absolutely.
And most of the time, I find when I talk to, you know, like obese patients and all that, sometimes it's a family thing, right? It's a family eating habit. It's not just about the child. If the adult doesn't eat any vegetables, then it's going to be difficult, right, to get your child to eat vegetables. So that's why I think children are a very good start to get them start right in their life. I know it's difficult, but never give up and always find ways to do that, because it's worth that investment. Right. I mean, they grow up, they become healthy adults.
Yeah. So coming back to vitamin D, a question here on WhatsApp. My vitamin D level is 54 instead of 74. Should he take supplements?
Okay. That's very interesting question. Because right now, if we look at recommendations, vitamin D levels which are above 50 nanomoles are considered actually adequate. Okay, of course, the best is to achieve that 75, but we've yet to really know what exactly is the optimum level for vitamin D, right? So at the moment, when we do our research, shall we? We look at above 50 nanomoles as being still in the adequate range. It's very hard to achieve the 75, but really, we also don't know if you reach 50 and you reach 75, is there a difference? What is the health outcome like? Right. So most of the time, vitamin D is important, for example, for bone health. Like, that's what most people are aware of. Right. So that's pretty clear. If you're above 50 nanomoles, it seems to be adequate. Right. In terms of immune system, in terms of other health benefits of vitamin vitamin D and linked to diseases, there still needs to be a lot more research to determine what's the optimum level. So if your level is at 54, continue to get more sunlight, continue to take care of your diet. And I guess if you don't see any other, you know, if you're healthy, then no need to go for vitamin D supplements.
Okay. Speaking of bone health, well, I guess this is related to joints, perhaps. Is taking glucosamine long-term harmful?
Okay. Glucosamine and chondroitin are two compounds that are, very commonly so for joints, right? And for cartilage. Huh? I've actually done quite a bit, some work there, and we saw that it doesn't quite improve in terms of building the cartilage, but improves in terms of pain. So there's less, pain. So is it harmful in the long term? We've not really come across people who, regularly takes it. People tend to take it for a while, and then after that, they're not very compliant with it already because they find that it doesn't really help beyond a certain level.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, all right. One more question is supplements for eczema or, itchy skin conditions.
That's another very difficult area where the evidence is a bit iffy, right? So there are some studies showing that certain types of supplement help, some say no. There's no concrete data on that. It does really help with eczema. I think it's better to see your dermatologist and get proper medical treatment for it.
All right. Now, moving on to probiotics. So we have one question here about, whether, what purpose do probiotic supplements serve, whether someone needs to take them. Actually, there are several. So I'm going to start with that first. How do you know if you need probiotics?
Okay, now, so the area of probiotics and prebiotics are now really new science, very exciting science, because your gut now can determine your whole health of the body. So there's lots of studies now linking probiotics. These are live microorganisms in our gut. They are called the healthy gut bacteria. Mm-hmm. And it's very strain specific though, like lactobacillus. And even if it's lactobacillus, acidophilus, or rhamnus, or bifidobacterium, these are the good bacteria that we know, right? And it's very strain specific. Mm-hmm. So what studies are showing is actually they can impact, they call it the gut-brain axis, So the bacteria are really can affect how the rest of our body work. One of it is on immune function. So most of it act in the gastrointestinal tract, and they can actually enhance our gut barrier function. That means prevent pathogens from coming in. It increases, it stops virus from replicating. It enhances our white blood cells. So it actually has a mechanism that it can actually improve immune system. And interestingly, Xiaoyik, probiotics and respiratory infections, right? There are quite good studies showing that it does help in children as well as adults. Some studies even show that if you have pneumonia and you're on ventilator, giving probiotics actually improve it, the outcomes. Yeah. So there are very strong, good studies coming about probiotics. So, but we don't know enough about how the Malaysian diet affects our gut health. What kind of bacteria we have. We know that if you eat high fiber, if you eat whole grains, again, I have to tell you, you have to eat healthy foods. Right, those that are recommended in dietary guidelines, it is associated with better, healthier bacteria, right? And therefore, it improves your health. So you can get it from yogurts, right? I know there are also supplements, but you can get it from yogurt. From foods. There are foods that contain probiotics, like fibers, vegetables, fruits, and so on. That actually, it's good lah. Fermented foods usually contain probiotics.
There's an interesting question. There's a local supplement brand promoting locally derived probiotics that claim to be better suited to our local diets. Is there any truth to that?
I think if it's locally produced, that means okay lah. That means they have factories that can produce the lactobacillus, right? But it will act the same way. I don't think it's like locally suited to Malaysian diet. Mm. We don't know enough about what's the gut microbiome like amongst Malaysians. We have to collect stool, and then go and analyze it. So I hope there are more studies coming out. But what we do know is it's again back to healthy eating, and that actually promotes healthy bacteria.
All right. Now, Kim wants to know about taking omega-3 fish oils. How do they help our body cells?
Okay, omega-3 is again another very interesting nutrient that is also highly studied. One of the things, it was touted at one point that omega-3 also helps with immune system. It helps with other aspects of, you know, triglyceride, cholesterol lowering, and so on. So do we get enough omega-3? Most of it, it's going to come from, again, oily, you know, fish, right?
Salmon.
Our ikan kembong. Not necessarily have to be salmon. Even the local ikan patin and all are quite rich in omega-3. So if you incorporate that into your diet, that'll be good. Also from oils, lah, you know. So right now we have cooking oils that have got omega-3. You get them in eggs as well. So incorporating some amount of omega-3 into our diet as part of a whole food diet is it's fine.
So ikan kembong, you said, ikan patin.
Patin, you know, the local fishes do contain some amount of omega-3.
That's
mackerel,
great.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. All right. That's great. Another question. Is zinc good for men? Any harm of consuming it? And I don't know if it's related to, I know that zinc is touted for, you know, erectile dysfunction, for instance.
Yes, that's right. So zinc is important for integrity of the cells. It's important for, like you say, related to production of testosterone. So can we, the amount of zinc, these micronutrients, shall we, that we need in a diet, they come in micrograms. They don't even come in grams, right? Milligrams or micrograms. So a wholesome diet, where you're taking, you know, the food groups, all the food groups, cereals, grains, you're taking fruits, vegetables, and also zinc is found in proteins, right? Chicken, fish, lean meat. It's enough to meet your requirement.
All right. All right. Now, an interesting one. I had to look it up. I'm taking ACV daily after meals. Will that help? And
what's
I understand
that?
It's apple cider vinegar. And
okay.
They come in supplement form.
Yes, yes. It's touted to be apple cider vinegar. I think it's already been around as a supplement for a long time. And essentially, I think people take it as, you know, in spoonfuls, right? Seem to have a lot of health benefits. I would say if you are taking it every day and you see that it, you know, it's up to you, does it really going to make a big difference? I think the macro stuff will probably be more important, meaning the, again, back to eating healthily will probably have more impact than taking apple cider vinegar.
All right. Well, I mean, one thing I'm getting out of you is not to rely on a particular supplement or some formulation as a magic bullet. You know,
it doesn't replace.
You keep coming back to that.
Yeah. I'm afraid that is the truth. You know, it doesn't replace. We have got more, because being a researcher myself, whenever I look at studies that look at compare people who take supplements, you know, versus, you know, longevity versus any health outcome, it always comes out as neither here nor there. Right. It's always not enough studies, or the studies actually are in animals. Their studies are in cells, but when they do human trials, it doesn't work.
But we still want to believe in something, right?
Because I think as human beings, we want some kind of insurance, right? And therefore, it's much easier, by the way, the convenience of taking a pill versus having to, you know, cook healthy food and, you know, change behavior. And versus not having to eat nasi lemak every day. It's hard, right? That's hard. But taking a pill is easy. So we think that is some kind of insurance. But in my 20 over years of working with patients and working with healthy adults, really, nothing beats eating a wholesome diet.
Yes.
Nothing beats that.
We have Winston asking about Q10. I think that's coenzyme Q10?
Yeah.
Is it good? Yeah.
So Q10 supplement has been one of the things that I know is that it's supposed to help with muscle function, right? And it's also as an acne oxidant. In older adults, sometimes your Q10 level can go down, so you tend to feel tired. So there seems to be some effect that there might be, there might be some proper functioning. It's a coenzyme, so it's for proper functioning of our organs. So people with certain diseases like heart failure, high blood pressure, those who have diseases of the muscle, mm-hmm. HIV infection, they have lower levels of Q10, right? But for the rest of us who do not have these conditions, you don't need to worry about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have an interesting one here. Do nootropics really work, including for mental health issues?
Yes. So nootropics are ingredients that come up for, that's supposed to tout your brain function, right? So caffeine, for example, can be considered a nootropic. In those days when I was studying, if I want to stay up late, I want to stay alert, I take my coffee, right? Mm-hmm. There are some ingredients that are being studied for that tend to stimulate mental health. Green tea, for example, and then there are specific components, very scientific names. There's still a lot of studies going on. But what we don't know is how they really work. Other than in very specific conditions like ADHD, some of these, may seem to help in focusing their attention. But otherwise, try not to take this because the side effects are pretty scary. So if you overdose on these kind of nootropics, you get insomnia, you can get high blood pressure, you can get tachycardia, mm-hmm. And then it becomes an addiction.
All right.
So I think it's still better to make sure you get enough sleep, right? Eat a healthy diet, manage your stress. I think that's better and talk to someone. If you're stressed, if you have mental health issues, I think that would probably help you more.
Mm-hmm. What might be some examples of nootropics, so that people are aware?
There's these things called L-theanine, right? It's L-theanine. It enhances the effects of caffeine. Mm-hmm. Then there is also choline, right? Choline, they call it CDP choline. It's actually prescribed as a drug, some of these for dementia. Then there's creatinine, there's Ayurvedic herbs as well that tend to, have some brain processes and help to connect the cells better. The issue here is that there are interesting studies, but we don't really know how they work yet. So maybe we need to give it a bit more time to see more trials.
All right. Mm. Wow, the questions are still coming in, Prof. We've got one. Milk thistle for liver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've heard about that as well. Long time being tutored to enhance liver function, mm-hmm. right? Actually, we don't need that because your liver is an incredible powerhouse in our organ, in our body. Okay, so does it help? I've not really seen it. So people with liver failure and so on, it's due to other conditions. And shall we? I don't really see, and I don't think there's really strong evidence to recommend it.
All right. Mm. I've got one here that I would like to address. We're kind of running out of time, but this one just quickly. I know we've talked about vitamin D supplementation, but mm-hmm. can it be taken by those who are on high blood pressure medications?
I don't think there's a contraindication, but be sure why you're taking the vitamin D. So that's important. Most of the time, from my clinical experience, is vitamin D and calcium is being recommended for the purpose of bone, or because the person has a high risk of osteoporosis or fractures,
All right?
But I don't think there's a contraindication there.
Okay. But if you are being prescribed hypertension medication, do ask your doctor about supplements that you want to take or are taking as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. Anyone who wants to take, if you're on any medication, you have chronic illnesses, it's always good to just check with your GP doctor first.
All right. Just one last one. I think that's all we have time for today. Is taking lemon juice every day good for the body or is it harmful?
Probably going to give you vitamin C, I suppose. And it makes the water taste better.
Can't
it
be
shouldn't
any harm
be harmful.
In that.
No, I don't think so. No, there's no harm in that.
Okay. You know what? We've still got questions we can't address. We're running out of time. But, you know, thank you so much to everyone for sending them in. You know, if there's an opportunity, we'll get Prof. Winnie back for another show to address more of these. Supplements, never a topic that goes stale, right?
I think so. Yes, it never fails. Just be very cautious about taking, and, you know, just remember that if you're thinking of taking a supplement, why not put your efforts into eating healthy, right? And unless you really have a condition that requires it.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much, Prof.
Thank you so much, Shawi. Thanks to all the audience.
I've been speaking to Professor Dr. Winnie Chi, President of the Malaysian Dietitians Association, about supplements. Now, some of your questions that came in did ask about things that had been addressed earlier in the show. So if you missed any part of it, you can look up the podcast. Search for supplements and you can get that on our website, bfm.my, or on our BFM app. This has been Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.